Classics Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, delivering an hour of continuing series. Later on, One Man's Family and the conclusion of a five-part story on yours truly, Johnny Dollar. But right now, episode 5 of 10 of The Cobra King Strikes Back on Adventures by Morse from May 19, 1946.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The Cobra King Strikes Back, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
An oriental jungle caravan of elephants, wild ponies, camels, and strange sure-footed little pack animals of the Himalayas, driven by sullen bandit-faced natives, have kidnapped the combined parties of Captain Bart Friday and Dr. Howard Carter. They have kidnapped them and packed them off a day's march from Angkor, back in the Cambodian jungles of French Indochina, finally depositing them in an ancient ruin of an old Khmer temple. The two girls, Celia Carter and Patricia Young, were placed in one stone chamber, and the four men, Captain Friday, Professor LeBrun, Skip Turner, and Perry Mills, in a second big chamber. And then, unaccountable things began to happen. A strange, bodiless voice came to the girls, urging them to persuade their menfolk to turn back. A mulatto guard told Skip Turner that they were prisoners in the ancient Temple of the Gorillas. Then Perry Mills vanished from the room, almost before the eyes of his fellow prisoners. And on top of this, they discovered that their guard also had disappeared, leaving their prison gates wide open. And then to climax it all, there suddenly came the terrified screams of the two girls.
Hey, Captain! Captain, that's Patricia and Celia.
The girls, come on.
Hey, Captain! Captain Friday!
This way, Skip! Professor LeBrun!
Captain, there's more rat runs down here under this building. We're going to get lost, sure. We've already lost Professor LeBrun.
But the girls...
Well, what's the use of everybody getting lost? Looky here, you've run into a blind alley yourself.
Come, let's go back where we started the herd of the screams. We'll start all over again.
For an hour, they scoured the underground passages. First, Skip would get lost, then Professor LeBrun, and finally Captain Friday himself stumbled around in the darkness for half an hour before he got back to the starting point. Nothing more has been seen or heard of the girls, and now they've just about given up.
Hey, what's that?
Monkeys. Listen.
I see. What's that?
I didn't hear nothing.
Well, listen.
Sounds like carpenters was at work.
Any idea what that rapping is, LeBrun?
No, but it sounds as though it might be coming from our prison chamber.
Well, let's go back in and see.
Well, I'm going to jimmy this gate just so I don't swing shut and lock us in.
I don't hear it now, do you?
It's gone.
Well, let's go back inside.
It's getting closer. It's in this room, all right.
That's right. It's back over here by that pile of rice straw.
Well, I don't want anybody ever lock us up with that gate again. I jimmied the inside.
Now, listen now.
Right under our feet.
Yes. That doesn't solve the question of what it is.
Hey, I've got it.
Yes?
Sure. The gorillas.
Maybe. What do you think, LeBrun? Hmm?
Why not try to find out?
Theorizing won't help us.
Any suggestions?
It seems to come from under this pile of rice straw somewhere.
Then let's shove some of it aside and see what we find.
This will go good in my diary. 27, rode elephant. Ate monkey stew and ended the day by shoveling rice straw in the Temple of the Gorillas.
The day isn't over yet, Skip, and besides, you haven't shoveled any rice straw.
Yes, Skip, how about giving us a hand?
I wasn't drugged up to be no straw shoveler.
Just what were you drugged up to be?
Hey, look here, almost under our feet.
Hey, a trap door.
Well, it most certainly looks like a crude sort of handle sticking up out of the floor. But I don't see your trap door, Captain.
No, doesn't seem to be any break in the floor. Now listen, pounding's right beneath the handle.
Supposing we try to turn the knob?
That won't do any harm.
Yeah? What makes you think it won't? Supposing it's the gorillas making that noise?
We'll have to chance it.
Yeah, but they've taken our guns away from us.
Can't help that now, Skip. Go ahead, LeBrun.
Very well. Here goes.
Hey, look out!
Great heavens! We've lost Skip!
Now we know what became of Perry Mills.
You mean he went through the trapdoor, too?
He was lying right on top of it.
The minute I touched that handle, the door in the floor dropped open and then snapped shut like an animal's jaw.
Skip went through like a shot.
That was a devilish dark hole. No chance to estimate how deep it is.
It was Perry doing the pounding.
By Jove, Captain, I wonder. But then, why doesn't he shout?
Didn't you notice how thick the floors are? We might hear pounding on the floor, but we'd never in the world hear voices.
Listen. See if we can hear the pounding again.
There it is.
Do you suppose we could drag a log in here and ram it in the opening to prevent the trapdoor from snapping shut?
I got a better idea.
Yes?
This trapdoor is much more likely to lead into a passage than just into a blind hole.
Well?
If that's the case, then there certainly is another entrance to it. Now grab a couple of torches off the walls and we'll scout around.
Righto.
But we may be stopped by these fellows that have been holding us prisoner.
I don't think so. Our guards seem to have vanished.
I have the torches, Captain.
Good. We'll try all the passageways we can find that seem to lead underground in the general direction of the trapdoor.
We'd better arm ourselves with some sort of weapons.
Pick up anything you can find. No telling what we'll run on scurrying around in these underground passageways.
Patricia and Celia may be trapped down there, too.
All we can do is hope for the best. I should never have brought Patricia up here.
Oh, I don't think either of us expected to run into this sort of thing.
Give me one of the torches. That'll leave you one hand free.
I'm afraid one hand isn't of much use in this spot.
Then we'll go outside and arm ourselves with clubs.
Well, that would be some comfort.
I'd better lead. I'm more used to this sort of thing than you.
I'm right behind you, Captain.
There's no one in the passageway. Come on.
Right.
On tiptoes now. Don't talk. The coast is clear around the corner.
All right.
Hello? What are these?
That's a couple of overgrown ice picks, according to Skip. As a matter of fact, those are the iron bars the native drivers use to guide the elephants.
Well, they'll make good weapons. Grab one.
So they will. Now, shall we turn back and look for our passageway?
Yes. Saw a rat run of a passageway leading off from this main corridor as we came along. It was headed in the right direction and seemed to slant down.
Good. Shall we try it first?
All right.
Captain, I suggest you keep your torch before your face. There's some mighty vicious spiders in this country. They spin their webs across just such dank, dark passageways. And the torches will clear the way.
Yes, but if I hold it in front of my face, then I can't see ahead. I'd hate like the deuce to step on a snake. They're not the friendliest playmates either.
I tell you what I'll do. I'll keep my torch low and I'll watch the patches ahead of you and warn you.
All right. Here we go down. What a place.
Right now, Captain, you are whiffing the decay of something like 20 centuries. You are walking in the dust of a very ancient past.
That's all right with me.
I wouldn't be surprised if we are the first white men ever to trod this passageway.
Are you watching the floor ahead?
Righto. You feeling uneasy?
Yes, I am.
Don't move, Captain.
What is it?
Hold very still. Got it. Walk it back.
What in heaven's name?
A deadly viper. It's almost under your feet. I've done away with it, though.
Thanks, LeBron. Now, let's keep going.
We are coming to a turn in the passage.
Yeah, so I see. In fact, this seems to be the crossroads for all the underground passageways in the world.
What a labyrinth! Passages are leading in every direction.
Better mark the one we've just come down so we can find a way out.
It's a good idea. I'll tie my handkerchief on this bit of rock.
Mm.
Now then, which passage shall we try first?
I don't know. Well, this one seems to lead in the general direction we want to travel.
Good. Lead on, Captain.
Careful. We go down three or four steps.
Right. Watch out for pitfalls.
There.
Oh, what is it now?
We picked a winding passageway. This way, I guess.
Coming to another turn.
Hold it. Don't tell me there's another snake.
I thought I heard voices.
Oh, that's a relief. I'd rather face a dozen Khmer fanatics than another snake in this place.
Listen.
A It's too far away to distinguish anything.
Shall we have a look around the corner?
Our torches will give us away. We'll have to leave them behind.
What? And run the chance of spiders and snakes?
Either that or run the chance of being recaptured.
Oh, I suppose it's best.
Here, we can wedge them in between these rocks. Yeah. That's good. Come along.
Girls' voices.
It's Patricia. Patricia!
Oh, Captain Friday, Boston, is that you?
Yes, are you all right?
Oh, yes, where are you?
I'll go back and get the torches.
Yeah, go ahead, Professor. Stay where you are. We'll join you in a second.
Hey, Captain, for the love of Pete, bring a light.
Hello, Skip. You all right?
Why, sure. That was a nasty drop you gave me, though.
Here's your torch, Captain. Is Perry Mills with them?
I don't know. Hi, Perry, are you there, too?
Yeah, I went through the trap door, too.
We certainly selected a great place for a family reunion.
Well, let's collect the crowd and get out of here.
But don't you realize you have the dust of 20 centuries on your shoes?
The quicker it's wiped off, the better it'll suit me.
Where you guys been anyway? I thought you never wanted to come down here and find us.
Oh, what a relief to be out of that awful smelling place.
Motion seconded by Perry Mills.
Boris, was this the room where you were held prisoner?
Yes, Patricia.
Well, ours was much smaller.
Hey, what do you suppose has happened to our captors? Let's go outside and take a look around. That caravan must be around somewhere.
Yeah, unless it fell through a trap door.
Feeling pretty frisky, aren't you, Skip?
Yeah, well, why not? How about you, Celia?
Oh, I feel swell now that we're all back together again.
We're not out of the woods yet, young lady.
Oh, yes, I know, but this is so much better than it was when Patricia and I thought we were all alone in this awful place. I really had the willies.
Before we do anything further, I want to know what's happened to you two girls.
Well, you go on and tell it, Patricia.
All right. Well, we were captured, just as we told you, and were brought here on a camel.
No, we went to one better. We came in on an elephant.
Well, riding an elephant couldn't be worse than a camel.
Well, when we got here, they put us in a kind of cell with only straw on the floor. Gee, we were awfully seasick from riding on the camel and couldn't stand up. So they carried us in.
Seasick? Never heard of it.
Well, what are you laughing at? It wasn't a bit funny.
Skip was sick all the way here, too.
Oh, it's the most terrible sensation in the world. Well, anyway, they carried us in and laid us on the straw and then brought us a bowl of stew.
It was wonderful. We ate every bit of it.
Yeah, know what it was?
Well, no, what?
Monkey stew.
Oh, honestly?
Sure, we had some, too.
Oh, I wouldn't have touched it if I'd known.
Oh, you mustn't be so sensitive back here in the jungle. You're liable to get that sort of thing regularly.
Hey, listen. Listen, everybody.
What is it, Skip?
There's somebody else in this temple with us, and he ain't very far off either.
Oh, you're nervous, Skip.
Yeah? Have you forgot they're supposed to keep live gorillas running around this place?
Captain Friday, Skip Turner, Professor LeBrun, Perry Mills, and the two girls, Celia and Patricia, have been reunited. Down in an unsightly underground rat run under the ancient Khmer temple, true, but still united. Still missing, however, are Dr. Carter, head of the expedition, and their Cambodian guide, Taquan. Just now, the two girls are telling their experience since the kidnapping. They are back in the room where the men were formerly prisoners. The chamber is lighted only by smoky reed torches.
Your ears are deceiving you, Skip. There is no one spying on us.
I heard something. You wait and see.
But we've waited 10 minutes, Skip.
Now you keep your eyes open down the passage, Skip. Go on with your story, Patricia.
Well, after we'd eaten, we heard a voice.
A voice?
Yes, boss. We couldn't see a thing. Just heard a voice that sounded as though it was in the room with us.
Oh, what did it say?
It said to go to our men, folks, and tell them that they still had an opportunity of turning back.
What do you mean, turn back? They had the hog ties to get us this far.
I know. The voice said that the force that brought us this far had the power to return us to Angkor if we would promise to leave Cambodia immediately and never return.
I told him we didn't even know where you were. And then the voice directed us to take a certain passageway from ourselves.
The door was unlocked.
Uh-huh. We did just what the voice told us to. And we came to that passageway where you found us.
You know, Professor, I don't understand why we heard the girls scream and couldn't hear their voices when we were right over their heads.
But we were out in the corridor when they screamed. Their voices probably came to us through the passageway that we followed in rescuing them.
That's a likely explanation. But why you girls screamed? Did you see something?
Well, it was when we met Perry. It was terribly dark. We could hear something moving around, but we couldn't see a thing.
You weren't any more scared than I was. When you screamed, my hair stood on end. All I could think of was Skip's story of gorillas.
Thanks for nothing.
Are you saying we sounded like gorillas?
Well, as soon as I got my senses back, I knew it was you girls.
Well, that's all.
Except that we found a loose rock and used it to pound on the floor to attract your attention.
Yeah, and then I did my spectacular nosedive into the manhole.
Now listen, everyone. If we're careful, perhaps we can escape from this place and make our way back to Angkor.
What? Through this jungle, unarmed?
We can't stay here forever.
Oh, but it would be impossible to get back without a guide.
Nevertheless, let's see what's doing outside.
Yeah, but look here, Chief. Hadn't one or two of us ought to go on ahead and look things over first?
I think we should stay together. We've had enough of this chasing one another through these dark passageways.
I'm inclined to agree with the professor. If there's anyone around, we've made enough commotion to attract their attention by now.
Talk about your mystery of the Khmer Empire.
Hey, you girls stay a few steps behind, just in case we run into anything up ahead.
Here's the corner where we picked up those elephant pods.
Yeah. We're not far from the entrance to the courtyard now. Quiet, everybody. Walk on your tiptoes.
Talk about adventures.
Yeah, too much. I didn't like it down there underground a bit.
Look, there's daylight. We're almost out.
Wait, the boss is waving us to keep quiet.
It's all right. Come on out. The courtyard's empty.
Empty? You mean all the elephants and camels and everything are gone?
Not even a smell left behind.
Well, I don't understand it. It's like magic.
Oh, it's not so much like magic when you examine the ground. Look here.
Yeah, all they've left behind are tracks in the dust.
The caravan has just moved on, that's all. Well, we've been left stranded out here in the midst of the Cambodian jungle without supplies or weapons of any kind.
But for what reason?
Probably on the order of some of the old Khmer priests who are instigating the Cambodian revolution with the aid of their precious seven-headed emerald cobra.
Yeah, Captain. They probably got wind of the fact that you and I was coming in here to grab off the cobra idol and recapture Fen Lo.
Oh, boss, you're not still after that Cambodian boy, are you?
Fen Lo is a menace to the French government, and he killed a man to escape. He's a criminal. And he's the first criminal that ever escaped from my custody. I won't leave this country until we get him.
Patricia, come here. Over here in the courtyard.
Excuse me, boss.
It doesn't look as though we are going to leave here anyway.
Why do you say that, LeBrun?
It would be certain death to attempt to backtrack to Angkor through these jungles with neither food, nor blankets, nor weapons.
Nevertheless, we're going to try it.
I'm with you, Chief.
And Professor LeBrun's right, Captain Friday. We haven't a chance in the world to make it. Besides the poisonous reptiles and insects, there are tigers, wild elephants, and innumerable other animals. And that's not mentioning the fact that we haven't a guide.
I think that caravan left all the signposts we'll need.
Oh, be reasonable, Captain. Such a move would be the same as sentencing the girls to death.
Oh. Yeah, the girls.
Yeah. Well, supposing a couple of us fellas hike back then and let the other two stay here with Patricia and Celia. We could bring back a rescue party.
Once you get back to Angkor, admitting for the moment that you could accomplish it, do you think that you'd ever be able to find this temple again?
Why, sure. Don't be stupid. We'd follow the trail left by the caravan.
Which shows quite plainly how little you know of a tropical jungle.
What do you mean?
Well, merely that the jungle closes in behind such a caravan so that there is no trail. Within 3 days after a trail is made, it is obliterated by the rank grass and vines, unless it is used continually.
You ain't kidding me, are you?
Ask Perry here. He's an expert on that sort of thing.
And Professor LeBrun's right, Skip. And besides that, a person on foot wouldn't be able to make more than a mile or two a day fighting his way through the jungle. That's the reason the caravan uses elephants. They break through and make a path for the camels and the mules and the horses.
Hmm. What do you say to that, Captain?
Yeah, looks like we're out of our element here in the jungle, Skip.
Yeah, but we'll starve to death if we stay here.
No, not necessarily. We may be able to kill a few edible birds and animals.
Well, how'd we cook them? I ain't got a match on me. Have you?
No, but we still have the burning torches. We'll have to keep our fire going continually.
If your precious Cambodian guide, Taquan, hadn't skipped out, we might have a chance.
I think we will find Taquan has an excellent reason for his disappearance.
Perhaps Dr. Carter will hear of our kidnapping and start a search for us. Yeah, if he isn't in the same sort of a fix himself.
Well, anyway, supposing we remain here as comfortably as possible the rest of the day and overnight and see what materializes.
I'll make that bargain with you, Professor LeBrun. We'll wait 24 hours. Then we'll have to do it my way.
Oh, here come the girls back.
Well, whatever we do, let's stay together. It's so dreadfully still.
Talk about your desert islands.
Yeah, not a sound except the wild parrots and the monkeys in those bamboo trees.
Hey,
I wonder if we can get out of this courtyard. Maybe we're locked inside these walls.
Oh, no, we are not. There's the gate yonder, wide open.
Oh, it's like being the only ones left in the world, isn't it? But I bet that whole ruin is going to look wicked when the sun starts to go down.
There is a sinister aspect about it, at that.
Yeah, it's just the kind of place where I'd expect them to throw a person into the gorilla's cage.
Skip Turner, what are you talking about?
Sure, that's what the guard told me they used to do.
Well, why did you have to say that?
I think it was quite inexcusable.
Yeah, well, if I'm going to have gorilla nightmares tonight, I want to know that some of the rest of you are having them, too.
I think your guard gave you a fine fairy tale for the $20 you gave him, Skip. He told you his caravan was turning us over to someone else, too, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Well, if there is as much truth in his story about this being the temple of the gorillas, then it is probably all fiction.
Well, as I said before, it's his story, not mine.
Hi, Professor LeBron and Captain Friday.
Hello, Perry's run into something.
What's the matter, Perry?
Hey, come over here and see what I've got. Bring the crowd.
Hey, come on, let's go.
Well, I can't imagine.
What have you found, Perry? I don't see anything out of the ordinary.
Well, look, gunny sacks.
Well, what about them?
Food.
Huh?
Are you certain, Perry? Sure, the big one's rice, and the one over there's dried dates and figs, and then there's coffee and even some dried monkey meat.
Well, it looks as though we weren't meant to starve anyway.
This thing doesn't add up. What do you make of it, Professor?
Nothing, beyond the fact that we appear to have a most humane antagonist.
Well, anyway, let's drag this stuff inside the temple where the birds and animals can't get at it. Oh, just a minute.
You got an idea, Chief?
Yeah. Now that we have food to carry with us, one or two could easily make an effort to get through to Angkor.
We have food, Captain, but no guide.
I'll take a chance on it alone.
Oh, no, boss. Please, not alone.
Oh, supposing we sleep on it and talk it over again in the morning.
Well, all right. I said I'd wait 24 hours. Come on, everybody. Let's set up camp for the night.
Hello. What's up? Well, I'll be, Professor LeBrun, Captain Friday, wake up.
That you, Perry?
Yes, Captain, look at the door.
Well, it's guarded.
Hey, what's the idea waking a guy up in the middle of the night? Can't you see it's still dark?
That's just because the torches in here are burnt out. Skip, take a look at that door.
Hmm? Well, for the love of Pete. Hey, it looks like we're prisoners again.
Can't see my hand in front of my face. Is LeBrun awake?
Wide awake, Captain.
What do you know about this, LeBrun?
Nothing at all, I'm afraid, Captain.
Hey, I'm going up to the gate and take a look through the bars.
What for?
To see if our guard's the same one we had before.
But don't let him see you. And come right back.
Okay.
Well, it certainly looks like our vanishing caravan had returned.
Or else a second one has moved in on us.
We shouldn't have made this room our headquarters.
Yeah. All they had to do was set a guard before that door and we're prisoners again.
Boss, are you there?
Yes, Patricia.
What's the matter?
We're prisoners again.
Prisoners? Well, did they come for us in the night?
We don't know. I just woke up and there they were.
I've got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Why couldn't we all drop through the trap door and escape through the underground passageway?
Hey, not bad.
Yes, it might work. What do you think, LeBrun?
It's worth looking into.
Hey, folks, we got a new deal in guards. I saw half a dozen fellas and they was all the same nationality as Fan Lo and Taquan.
Cambodians, eh?
Huh? LeBrun, do you suppose this is the gang that paid to have us kidnapped by that caravan?
It seems likely.
Well, then the other guard was telling the truth when he said that we was being transferred into the hands of the real enemy at this point.
It looks so, doesn't it?
A good thing we brought our supply of food in here. We'll drop it through the trap door and then follow it one at a time. If we can escape from this room, we can hide in the passageways until they've gone. Are the sacks tied up tight?
Yes, I saw that last night.
And set them on the trap door.
Well, wait till I locate the sacks first. So blamed up.
Oh, here they are, right here.
Tell me when they're on the door.
I've got the handle. There they are. Turn the handle, Captain.
What in...
What's the matter, boss?
Trap door doesn't work anymore. I can't budge it.
Oh, you can't budge it.
We'll have them all down on our necks.
Shall I try?
If you like, but it's useless.
So it is. It looks as though our new captors were familiar with this old castle.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Well, it looks as though they put our trapdoor out of commission, don't you think?
Well, then we're in for it.
Looks so.
Hello. Someone's coming in here with torches.
It looks like the entire Cambodian nation. They're certainly not taking any chances of being overpowered.
Well, why don't they say something? Are they all deaf mutes?
Everyone stand quietly.
Not me. I'm putting up a battle. You just let them come near.
Do what you're told, Skip. Useless to fight. They're 10 to 1 against us.
Captain Friday,
What are they going to do? Why don't they say something?
Keep your chin up, Patricia.
Look, some of them are carrying torches, and the rest are armed.
Easy now, Celia. What do you people want? Who are you?
Hey, you can't tie my hands behind me. What do you think you're doing?
Skip, don't be a fool.
Take your hands off me.
Patricia, there's no use fighting him.
Bill, just tying your hands behind you the same as with the rest of us.
Are you all right, Celia?
Oh, yes, only I'm awfully scared, Perry.
Keep calm, everybody. Nothing very terrible has happened yet.
But what are they going to do with us?
Well, now that we are all trussed up, it looks as though we were to be marched out into the open.
Now, what's the matter with these guys anyway? Are they deaf and dumb?
Keep next to me, Patricia.
All right, boss. Coming, Celia?
I'll look out for Celia as much as I can.
Well, here we go.
Don't do that, Celia. You're trembling like a leaf. Perry, don't you recognize that chant?
No. Do you?
It's the death chant Fenlow sang the night he disappeared off the ship. Oh, look. They're making Skip get on a horse.
Hey, you. I hate horseback riding.
They're going to make a horseback rider out of him. Look, they're tying him on.
You mean they're going to tie us each on a horse?
Yeah, it looks that way.
Do you suppose that death chant was meant for us, Perry? Oh, look.
No, no, leave me alone. I won't. Leave me alone.
Next week, you will hear the sixth episode of The Cobra King Strikes Back, entitled Terrors of the Hollow Mountain. This newest radio thriller is another in the series of Adventures by Morse.
Adventures by Morse on Tuned to Yesterday, episode 5 of 10 of The Cobra King Strikes Back, from May 19th, 1946. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now we continue with the daily serial of One Man's Family from Radio's Yesteryear. This NBC broadcast features The Book of Teddy, Book 78, Chapter 21, from September 29th, 1950.
One Man's Family, brought to you every weekday night at this time, transcribed by Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer. Chapter 21, Book 78. Teddy Barber's ex-fiancée, Elwood Giddings, who spent the last 3 days in Letterman Hospital after a heart attack, is suddenly back in the Barber family home at Seacliff, San Francisco. Clifford and Henry Barber drove down to the hospital to get him about an hour ago. It is 4:45 in the afternoon now, and Elwood, in bed in Claudia's old room where he stayed during an earlier visit, is now sitting up in bed eating Mother Barber's famous chicken soup. Clifford, who was less than enthusiastic about Elwood in the beginning, has been feeling sorry for him ever since Teddy broke the engagement. He has just pulled up a chair beside the bed as Elwood tastes the soup.
It's good, huh? Mom has a theory that soup will cure anything, including German measles.
Well, I think she's right, Cliff. Well, that's good. Cliff, you look kind of tentative in that chair. Sit back. Gee, it's great to have visitors. Of course, if you're busy, why...
Elwood, haven't you heard? This is Cliff. I'm never busy.
Well, anyway, Cliff, it's nice to have somebody up here. You know, there isn't anything in the world that can make you feel quite as lonely as a heart attack.
Yeah. Feeling all right now, though.
Oh, sure. But when I first got into the hospital, I was afraid to even move my hands. I was afraid I'd jar something.
I'd be afraid, period.
I was afraid, period, myself. Teddy'd look in on me whenever she could get out of surgery for a minute. I'd be so darn glad to see her, but I was scared to turn over. She said I just moved my eyes. But then she brought Major Brixton in with the electrocardiograph. Convinced me that a lot of people with hearts worse than mine have lived for years. So, well, I felt a lot better then. He said the whole thing could have been largely psychosomatic anyway.
Psychosomatic? You mean you thought you had a heart attack?
Oh, no, I had one. I had a dilly. But I was so upset and everything, and just made it seem worse than it really was.
Well, how's the patient?
Hazel, come on in. Patient's getting the well-known House of Barber chicken soup treatment.
Oh, it'll cure you, Elwood. It's cured everything in this family for as long as I can remember.
Well, hello, Mrs. Hazel.
Well, you look fine, Elwood.
Well, if the barber's all being so nice to me, why wouldn't I? Whose idea was it, anyhow, to come and move me out of the hospital and back up here.
Oh, just a little thing that occurred to Dad at breakfast.
Well, folks told me you were here. How are you, Elwood?
Hi, fella.
Hello, Paul.
Oh, hello, Paul. Yeah, like the bad penny. How are you? Aren't you home early?
I have a dinner meeting tonight. Well, how's all your machinery?
I think I'm hitting it all six now.
I'm glad to see you so chipper. Mom says Teddy's coming home early today, too.
Yes, I'm expecting her any minute now. Here, pull up a chair, Paul.
No, I can't stay, Elwood. Thanks. I'm on my way up to change. Now, how are you, Hazel?
Well, Dad says my newfound freedom has made me a little giddy. You know, Elwood, I'm the mother of three freshmen, two college and one high school. So if you want any answers to academic questions, come right to me.
Gee, it's nice of all you to take the time to stop in and see me. I'll bet you were surprised, Paul, to hear I was back in Claudia's room after all that's happened.
Oh, not at all, Elwood.
Well, I'm kind of surprised. I kind of have to pinch myself.
Come on in, Jack. Betty, come on. Elwood likes having visitors. Yes, he's been lonesome.
Gosh, what is this, a convention?
It's a barber sanitarium. Visiting hours around the clock.
Hello, Jack.
Yes. Here's the evening paper, Elwood.
Oh, Mr. Barber, I don't want to take your paper till you've read it.
I order two tonight, Elwood.
Hey, where'd Betty go?
Huh? I don't know. Hey, Betty. Well, what did she do? Fall through the floor?
Betty says something about stepping into our bathroom to use the scales.
Well, our bathroom scales have been kind of unpredictable ever since the kids tried to take them apart. Well, Elwood, you're looking swell.
Oh, I'm the best I've been lately.
Elwood, what did the hospital say about having visitors?
I didn't ask. I wanted to be able to see a lot of people. I was telling Cliff a while ago there's nothing can make a man feel lonesomer than when you have a heart attack.
Well, you're anything but lonesome now, Well, I'll see you all later.
Thanks for coming in, Paul.
Good luck, Elwood. My best to Dan, Hazel.
Thanks, Paul.
Hey.
Oh, gee, sit here, Mr. Barber. Sit on the band.
Oh, yes. Well, when I had my knee operation, I tell you the long, lonely hours when you don't know if you're going to live or die, and nobody comes to see you.
Father. Oh. Your family all but broke down the doors whenever visitors were permitted.
Oh, by the way, have you people seen the scar on my knee now, the way it's healed up?
Are you sure we want to?
Well, my word.
Teddy.
What's going on in here?
Well, hello, Teddy.
You post a notice on the door. You must know a crowd in on Elwood like this.
Oh, you walked in on the climax, Teddy, really. We've been arriving very quietly, one at a time.
Well, I'm not going to send you all out one at a time. On your feet, everybody. Out you go in a body.
Oh, no, Teddy, there.
Oh,
nice,
Elwood. Come on, all of you. Scoot. Come on. Out with you.
Yes, the voice of authority.
I was just leaving anyhow.
It's very nice of you to all come and see Elwood, but we're going to have to make some rules here. Cliff, take Elwood's tray with you.
Okay, ma'am. Rough, isn't it?
Sorry, Father Barber. You two, come on. I talk the same way to a general.
I hope we haven't tired you, Elwood.
Oh, not at all, Hazel.
Well, look out for the tray.
Thank you all for coming.
You shouldn't let them do this, Elwood.
Oh, I enjoyed it, Teddy. It was fine of them to come.
You know, let me fix your pillow. You look so uncomfortable.
It's a shame for you to have to work in the hospital all day and take care of me in the evening.
I wouldn't if I didn't want to. You lift your head.
Thanks. Of course, don't get the idea. I object. I don't want you to get too tired.
Let me have your wrist.
Pulse again?
Oh, be quiet a minute.
Okay, Teddy. If my heart is thumping a little hard now, it's only because you came into the room.
Quiet.
Well, don't frown so, Teddy.
Shh. You are better.
Am I?
Mm-hmm. It'd be a good thing if you could sleep for a little while, Elwood.
Oh, I could, maybe, with you here, Teddy, but I suppose you want to go up and change your things.
I'll stay.
Well, would you sit here on the edge of the bed?
Oh, it's not very professional. Major Bixton wouldn't approve of it.
What? Do you feel you have to be professional, Teddy?
Move over a little.
Oh, Teddy, I didn't get a chance to tell you how much I appreciated you looking in on me so often over there at Letterman. I know how busy you are and how many important things you have to do all day.
You need a haircut, young fellow.
Leave your hand on my forehead, will you?
I think you have a bit of a temperature.
No, I'm just alive again, that's all. I've almost dared to hope that... Teddy, when I left here that night,
Do we have to talk about that night?
I think we really should.
I was very cruel, Elwood.
Oh, no, you weren't. I can see how you felt it. There's so much to talk to you about. I, I'd like us to be completely honest with one another.
Oh, Elwood. Oh,
I don't want to dramatize it, but I do want to tell you, when death comes as close as I thought it was, maybe I wasn't in real danger, but I felt I was, and that's just as good. I mean, you can be completely honest with yourself when you don't know how long you'll go on breathing.
I know, Elwood.
Well, when they were taking me to the hospital in the ambulance, I realized that in Europe I was a different fella in a lot of ways. The uniform makes a difference, and the background, too, and the gaiety, and, well, at best I'm not too darn diplomatic, I guess, and here in San Francisco, I must have loomed up in front of you like a perfect stranger, if not a actual rube.
Oh, no. No, Elwood.
I'm not too darn articulate either, Teddy, but what I'm trying to say is, I know you've been blaming yourself for what happened, and you mustn't. I had one of these attacks, two of them, as a matter of fact, before I ever met you, and, well, if I ever get another, I can cure it, I think. Just by remembering how kind you've been to me these last few days.
Elwood, I was 100% healed.
No, no, now don't say that. Nobody can help the way they feel about another person. Everybody changes, and you'd forgotten in Europe how much your family and Paul meant to you. Oh, by the way, Paul's here. He's upstairs changing. Maybe you want to go up and see him before he gets away.
No. I'll stay here with you, Elwood.
Oh. Thank you, Teddy. I'm almost afraid to ask you one thing that's been on my mind ever since yesterday when you suddenly bent down and...
This isn't very good for you.
No, no, no. Stay here. It's all right. I'm fine. Teddy, when you suddenly kissed me yesterday, well, all this attention and kindness, is it just because I'm sick? When I'm well again, are we going to have to go back to the same old thing?
No, we'll never go back to that, I promise you. I want to marry you, Elwood. Tonight, tomorrow, whenever you wish. You just say when.
Oh, Teddy. Why, you know what's happened? That's mended my heart. I'm okay now, Teddy. I'll be out of this bed tomorrow. I'm completely cured.
Here's the family again.
Clifford, where's your mother?
In the kitchen, Dad.
I've got some news for her. Elwood and Teddy are engaged all over again. Oh, Fanny, here's news. Elwood and Teddy are going to be married as soon as the boy can get out of bed.
One Man's Family, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 29th of September, 1950, on NBC. We now close with part 5 of 5 of the Chesapeake fraud matter on yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This would be the third 5-part story the series aired, wrapping up that format on November 2nd, 1956, to then turn to a 30-minute format, the same way the series began on radio and ended. CBS closed out this story on October 21st, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
This is the operator. Ready with your call to Mr. Pat Kelleher in Baltimore. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hello, Pat.
Hey, I got your wire. What's all this? What happened?
We're still trying to find out. The man calling himself Frank Bowers was killed an hour ago. George Hanley, one of the operatives I had watching him, was killed, too. We've got a vague description of the killer.
Are you all right?
Yeah, but I'm going to be tied up with the police here.
Well, you need money for bail or anything like that, just draw a draft on the company. I'll confirm it.
Thanks, Pat.
Too bad about your friend.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I want to find out who killed him.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Universal Adjustment Bureau, Baltimore, Maryland. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Chesapeake fraud matter. Expense account continued. Item 13, a quarter for some aspirin. It turned out to be a long night. Several homicide officers arrived at the double murder scene within a matter of minutes and got right down to the business at hand. Frank Bowers had been shot to death. George Hanley had been shot to death. Lieutenant Tom O'Neill was in charge, a big blonde man who seemed to know what he was about.
Okay, let's see that ID again.
Here you go.
Insurance investigator, hmm?
That's right.
Okay. What was your business here with these two men?
My home office in Baltimore had reason to believe that Frank Bowers was really a man named John Reardon. Reardon was supposed to have died 5 years ago. I was sent out here to investigate it since there had been a $20,000 claim in the matter.
Sure, sure.
I hired George Hanley to help me out. He was keeping an eye on Frank Bowers. I came out earlier tonight to give him a hand and the shooting began.
Any idea who did it?
A big man in a top coat and a hat. I really didn't get a look at him, Lieutenant. I was busy with George Hanley.
Sure. You carry a gun?
Sometimes. I didn't have one tonight.
You tried to chase the killer?
I said I was busy with my friend.
Yeah, that's right, you did. Well, how was your investigation coming along?
Frank Bauer's fingerprints didn't match the samples I had for John Reardon, but it didn't satisfy me. There were a lot of things about him personally I couldn't accept. I harassed him a little last night, and he got pretty excited and slugged me. This was after I found out he'd been trying to call Baltimore.
Who in Baltimore?
I don't know.
Well, tell me about this harassing. We'll make a check with the phone company.
Well, I needled him purposely, trying to scare him into a blunder. I think I was doing pretty good. I'll never know now.
Uh-huh. What else you got to say about your case?
Well, that's about it, Lieutenant.
It is, huh?
Well, that's all I got to say because that's all I know about it.
Next time, be careful with your needling tactics, boy.
I was doing what I thought best on the case.
Sure you were. You were doing swell. You let a friend of yours get shot down in front of your eyes. Not to mention the other guy. You can't give us a description of the killer or a hint at the motive. Now, maybe George Hanley wasn't a friend of yours at that.
Why, you...
Dad, take it easy, kiddo. Take it easy. Remember, below the belt, I'm sorry. You've had quite a night. Nobody in your business or mine knows what's behind the door when he kicks it in. I'm just a cop trying to get straightened out, so I push too hard sometimes. We'll get it taken care of. Nobody walks in a man's house and shoots him down without somebody hearing something or seeing something. I mean, somebody besides you. Now, my men will cover every house in the block, in this whole area if we have to. Bound to be somebody somewhere.
The dogged Lieutenant O'Neill turned out to be 100% correct. In fact, he turned out to be 300% correct. For by 11 o'clock the following morning, his men had located three different people who had information about the brutal murders of Frank Bowers and George Hanley. The first was a man named Randall who had lived across the street. He had seen Bowers open his front door and admit the unknown killer. He said he wore glasses. The second was a paper boy who had come to collect while the killer was there. He stated that the killer and Bowers were arguing when he came up to the door. The third witness, a housewife, gave the most important information as to the man's description.
He was a good deal taller than Mr. Bowers.
How much taller?
3-4 inches at least. I saw him standing in the doorway from here. He had on a brown tweed topcoat. My husband has one just like it.
How old would you say he was?
45.
Have you ever seen him before?
No.
Would you know him if you saw him again?
Yes, anywhere.
You got that good look at him, huh?
Yes, the porch light was on.
Here's something, Dollar.
Lieutenant O'Neill had issued an all-points bulletin based on the combined descriptions given by the witnesses. In the meantime, his men had checked the local cab companies and found out that one of the drivers had carried a fare to Frank Bauer's home at 8 o'clock in the evening. The cab driver verified the housewife's description of the suspect and added the important information that he'd picked up the man at the airport. When that was checked, it was found the man had come in on a plane from the east at 5:45 in the afternoon. He had used the name Orrin Williams. Expense account item 14, $8.95. Another long-distance phone call to Baltimore and Pat Kelleher.
Well, I'll be darned. Do you have to stay there, John?
Of course I have to stay here. I'm a material witness. Not to mention the fact that a pal of mine was shot down.
Don't get on your high horse, John. It was just a question. Have any idea what it was all about?
Well, at the moment, I'm just sure a guy named Orrin Williams flew in, shot up two people, and beat it. If we had Williams, I'd give you the whole thing on a silver platter.
You're awfully touchy.
Well, this thing has gotten out of hand.
Well, I won't press you on it anymore, John. You do what you think is best. As far as the company's concerned, it's really not our business anymore, is it?
It's our business until it's cleared up.
Well, I mean Bowers. He wasn't John Reardon.
Dollar?
Hold it, Pat. Yeah?
Answer from Washington on your wire.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Here.
Let me see. Pat.
Yeah?
It is our business after all.
Huh?
The lieutenant here sent a hurry-up request to Washington on some of Bowers' fingerprints I mailed a couple of days ago. They check out.
I don't get it.
Bowers was John Reardon.
Oh. Well, Well, where'd you get the samples of Reardon's prints that didn't check out?
From Hugh Bryan, Reardon's attorney.
Well, I better call him.
Don't you dare. Don't open your mouth. I'll handle it when I get there. Tell me about this fella, Hugh Bryan. According to the phone company, that's the man Bowers was trying to call in Baltimore. I told him all I knew, and Lieutenant O'Neill listened thoughtfully. It became apparent from that point on, since Bowers' true identity had been established through Army records, that the bulk of the case could be concluded not in Denver, but in Baltimore. Expense account item 16, $216, plane fare and incidentals, Denver to Baltimore. I arrived at 10:15 in the evening, checked with the Baltimore police, who had been informed of the case by Tom O'Neill in Denver. At his request, they'd taken no action as yet. From the police station, I went directly to Hugh Bryan's residence. The house was English, conservative, and expensive. The fire in the living room looked cheerful when the door opened. Elizabeth Reardon did not look so cheerful.
Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Mrs. Reardon. Didn't expect to find you here.
No, I suppose not. I never expected to see you again.
Elizabeth, I have something to tell you.
Don't tell me now, Johnny.
It's about your husband.
All right.
I want to tell Mr. Bryan, too.
He's upstairs in his study.
Oh, wait. Look, I've done what I thought best about all this, and I'm trying to do what's best now.
It doesn't make any difference, Johnny. I'm a married woman again.
Huh?
Yes. You and I were married this morning. Excuse me.
I walked in and watched John Reardon's widow, alias Frank Bowers' widow, now Hugh Bryan's bride, disappear up a column stairway. The news that she had married Hugh Bryan cleared up some of the small doubts in my mind. When Bryan came back down the stairs with her, he looked anything but the happy bridegroom.
Hello, Dollar. You're a late caller.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Congratulations.
Thank you. How did you come out in Denver? Everything okay?
No, everything's not okay.
Well, what's the matter?
Do I have to tell you?
I'll run along upstairs, Hugh. It's getting terribly late.
All right, dear.
Good night, Mr. Dollar.
Good night, Mrs. Bryan. There'll be some men out to see you pretty soon, Bryan. Policemen.
Oh. Liz.
Yes, dear?
I think you'll be interested in what Mr. Dollar has to say.
I don't understand you.
I wasn't in Philadelphia yesterday, Liz. I was in Denver, Colorado.
What?
I flew there to see John. He's been alive and living there all this time.
Hugh.
I'm sorry. This is only for her benefit, Dollar. I'll tell it just once. When it gets into court, it'll be different.
How did it happen, Bryan? John Reardon didn't die in that boat.
No. He was picked up in a bay by a fishing boat on his way to Florida. They didn't have a radio on the fishing boat. The first port they came to was Charleston. John phoned me from there and told me all about it. Now, this was 10 days after we all thought he was dead. That part was all accident.
Sure.
The rest of it was a little different. Liz, it was his idea. You've got to believe that.
What was his idea?
Not showing up ever again. Letting everyone think he was really dead. Making you a widow.
I don't believe it.
He hated his life here. Yes, everything about it. He was in debt, right up to his ears. Of course, there was your money, but he... Well, I flew down to Charleston to talk to him. He was like a crazy man. Kept saying there was a way out. I didn't know what he meant at first. Then he came right out and said it was his chance to get away from all the things he hated. He knew how I felt about you then, how I feel about you now. He said I could have you for a price.
What was the price? Those checks he got every week from a New York bonding concern?
Yes.
What did they come to?
$25,000 a year, regular weekly payments. I could afford it. I could afford anything for you, Liz.
Did he come right out and tell you he hated me?
He just said he wanted to get away from everything. It went that way for 5 years. I believe I asked you to marry me every 6 months.
Yes.
But that didn't work out either. And then, one day... Along came Johnny Dollar. How does it feel to be so efficient, Mr. Dollar?
We don't have to go into that, do we?
No.
I'll admit you did everything to throw me off, and it threw me off. Especially the fingerprints you provided.
Didn't John Reardon insist his name was Frank Bowers and do everything he could to make you believe that was true?
He did too much to make me think it was true.
Where is he now? Where's John?
He's dead, Mrs. Bryan.
Oh.
Truly dead now. He was shot to death last night by Mr. Bryan. Mr. Bryan also shot a friend of mine, didn't you, Bryan?
Yes. John got scared, called me, said he was going to tell everything to Dollar, blow the whole thing.
You.
All I wanted out of this was you, Liz. He didn't want you. I did. Last week you decided to marry me. It took you 5 years to do that. And it took him one afternoon to decide he was going to come back to you.
The proof that John Reardon's widow is guilty or not guilty of a fraudulent insurance claim is a matter for Eastern Fidelity to decide. The matter of Hugh Bryan and two murders is a matter for the courts. Expense account, item 17, same as item 1, expenses from Baltimore to Hartford. Item 18, $89 even, car rentals, miscellaneous, etc. Expense account total, $1,124.98. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be a new exciting story on Johnny Dollar beginning next Monday.
Next week, a quiet, sleepy little town in Mexico and a beautiful senorita that... Well, things didn't stay quiet and sleepy for long. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 21st, 1955 on CBS. Wrapping up that storyline, we'll begin a new one next week as we continue the tales on Adventures by Morse and One Man's Family. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.